Okay, so we got a lot to be mad about this month. Welcome to Nature Boy. We are broadcasting live from Chinatown in Los Angeles on 1630 AM, and it is the 5th of February, 2017, Super Bowl Sunday.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My favorite day.
It's your favorite day of the year.
Yeah, I love it.
Also, this broadcast will be recorded and added to the Getty Archive as part of their exhibition going on right now. It's called Breaking News, Turning the Lens on Mass Media. That's the subtitle. And so it's a news, art show focused on news in this, I guess it's a response to, it's a response to this political climate, and I guess there being a lot of, there's a lot of fake news out there. So this is our special edition of Nature Boy this month, and it's a breaking news edition. So we decided to focus on news that's affecting science and science policy and our thoughts about that. So, yeah, and I'm joined also. Since we're being introduced to a new audience, this is a science, general science podcast show here on K-Chung. And my name is Michael. I'm a PhD student at the University of California, Riverside. And I also, my co-hosts are as well. So we have Marshall and Jess here. You guys want to introduce yourselves?
You did already, yeah. But hi, everybody.
Jess is a girl.
Hi, I'm Jess, and I'm a girl.
And my name's Marshall.
And their credentials are the same as mine. We're all PhD students.
Our projects are a little different, but
all plant biologists. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, we don't need to get into our projects right now.
No, not so much.
So many other things to talk about.
Yeah. Hey, John. Okay, and John is also joining us as well, who is another student.
And he's wearing a beautiful
PhD student
sweater.
Yeah.
I love it.
You can't see it.
My Baphomet Christmas sweater. Absolutely. Hail Satan.
I feel like you might be doing pretty well under this current administration. You will be just fine.
Hail somebody.
I mean, Satanism does encourage seeking personal gratification and pleasure. So I think this is a selfish administration, and it's very in keeping with my principles.
Oh, well, perfect. Congratulations. Good for you.
So, I guess we can just start talking about like some of the changes that are happening. Breaking news.
I'm really sorry to interrupt, but I have some breaking news from the Times of India.
Okay.
Apparently in India, 5 people a day are dying by falling into open manhole covers.
Wow.
We can maybe talk about this some other time.
No, this is perfect. So this actually goes on to the fact that they're actually worried that funding for statistics in the United States is going to get slashed under science policy restrictions.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So
who is the department responsible for his stats? Just like general stats?
No. Right here. Let's see.
The most boring.
The Department of Trivia. Yeah.
The American Community Survey. That's who's responsible for stats.
Would that be like the Secretary of Education who might control that? Like funding? She does like K-12 stuff.
Sure about that.
Not in my America.
Oh, the Department of Education?
Yeah, I was thinking because the Department of Education controls like where money is allocated for educating our future, like scientists and things like that.
I think the big concern here is now we won't have all of the information for doing like future planning. Right, so without the statistics to support where to invest the government's money, nobody really knows where to put it if you don't have the correct data or information. But what does this administration think about real data and statistics?
Right.
So.
Yeah, in fact, that's the bigger concern. When he decides who to appoint to, say, the EPA or something like that, it's not so much the policies that he puts into place, that new head, it's the fact that he's advising the president on issues like this.
Right.
Yeah, although currently what I'm reading here from Science Mag They're saying that the current director for the NIH, Francis Collins, is going to stay in place. So he's keeping everybody, as far as it looks like, for science policy in place until he comes up with...
And some appointments, I think, have not been decided yet in, on certain committees, like scientific committees, and so they're just like vacant positions right now, so which is common in a transition period, to, but he doesn't really have a plan to appoint these people. I guess I wanted to take a step back and talk about how the U.S. became like such a powerhouse in science.
Oh, yeah, I think that's great.
So we talked about this on a show before, but like basically after after World War II, the U.S. started to invest heavily in research and development in science, and that's why we kind of sort of were riding off of that, the successes of our
so this
in,
is like
industry.
Cold War policy.
Yeah. Okay. So the I guess early ideas for the for NSF. For the creation of the NSF, sorry. It started pretty much around the time of World War II, and it didn't actually get implemented until 1950. And then after that, that's
and
like
the
when...
And the NSF is...
The NSF is the National Science Foundation, and they are, I think, what receives a lot of... a good chunk of funding from the federal government for just basic and applied research. And from the NSF now we have other scientific agencies that actually, so the NSF was created as they wanted to basically collect all of these people that were doing research within different sects of the government. It was usually related to defense or energy, and they wanted to consolidate all of those fields together. But now the NSF is just like a kind of general basic and applied science, and there are other specific branches that receive more money for scientific research. But because of that, and because of like the USA's immigration policies that allowed a lot of people to come here and to do science, and the US heavily promoted science funding, and
all
that's why
all the manual labor.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
You go to the Home Depot and you get some scientists, and they come out, do some sequencing work.
If you walk around a university, it's like not too dissimilar from that. Yeah, I would say.
Yeah, I feel like I do manual labor every day.
Yeah, so that's kind of what happened in terms of science funding, and I guess I also wanted to note that in 2009, that was the So a year after Obama took office, that was the year that we had the most money allocated to research and development for science.
But I do want to say that was just 1 year.
Yeah, yeah.
So then it went right back down to...
Yeah, so as of 2014, spending on these government agencies, which include NIH, NSF, DOD, DOE, NASA, and the USDA, among others, it's just under $70 billion. In 2009, it was almost $80 billion. These are all these eight different agencies that fund science in the U.S. Yeah. And so, you know, generally, there's been a lot of contention, I think, in legislation over who should run these different scientific departments. When it was starting early on, there was a lot of pushback from, I guess, the general public where they thought that lay people should be on these committees, non-scientists. I think under Bush, actually, it was they basically appointed all scientists to these to the committee. I forgot what it's called exactly, but the one that turned into the NSF. And then since then, there's kind of been with different administrations. There's been debate over kind of who should be in charge of these different departments within the government, and you know, because there's the interests of they're kind of battling between the interests of scientists and science and what the general public, I guess, wants to see out of science.
Sure. Yeah, I think another big question is what's going to happen with the space programs, right? Because Obama he divested, right, from putting a whole bunch of money into NASA and kind of like flexing the financial arm of America in terms of space exploration, which was done under the Cold, like during the Cold War, right?
So, yeah.
And now they're thinking that maybe NASA's budget might increase, although then where are they going to take the money from? And it looks like they're going to divest the EPA. Right?
Mm-hmm. So. Well, that's basically what Trump has said. He ran on that platform. Mm-hmm. I think he might even say it on the White House website that he is going to be putting more money into space exploration. Mm-hmm. But I don't really, kind of like what you were saying, that there's this battle within science with the NSF about what the public wants and what science wants. Me as a scientist, of course it's cool to explore space and figure out anything we can figure out, but
I think it's also kind of like it's kind of funny because scientists are people too, and it's like we also have an opinion of like what's important for society as well. So I kind of do think that these committees should be scientists because they're also people with other interests.
Well, and scientists actually have maybe a better understanding than the general public about the reality for how long research should take or how much it might cost, right? Yeah.
Well, and I was researching for today's show. I read a Time magazine article by Jeffrey Cougar called Why Trump Will Lose His War on Science. And they actually brought up a really interesting point, which is the classic strategy of people not wanting policy changes based on science is to fund research. Because you give a bunch of scientists a bunch of money and you say, research this issue, and they'll do it for 20, 30, 50 years, you know, and then nothing ever changes. Hmm. So it's kind of interesting. I hadn't got that perspective before.
Hmm. Because
that is interesting. Think about
that's
tobacco.
Where the money is, but yeah.
Right now, yeah. Think about big tobacco. I think we talked about this in a previous show too, and how much money and time was sunk into proving or disproving that tobacco harmed people.
Well, as long as research is ongoing, you can just say it's inconclusive.
Mm-hmm. So I think just within these first 2 weeks of the administration, he's already targeted some scientific agencies, as people are pretty aware. The ones that he seems to be going after are specifically the EPA and the USDA, which have basically
place in our hearts.
Yeah, they fund a lot of the work that we do as plant scientists. Not me directly, but I wish I had extra money. A lot of our colleagues, I presume, are funded through the EPA and the USDA. Definitely, no, I presume. I know that for a fact.
Well, at the NSF, one thing you didn't mention about them is that they have, a small budget, but a discretionary budget for funding research like ours.
Right, yeah. Grants like but what I'm saying is he's targeting agencies that have regulatory power within the government. So he doesn't seem to be targeting basically purely scientific kind of funding agencies, such as the NSF. Which is the National Science Foundation, and the NIH, which is the National Institutes of Health. They don't have, say in what happens with
And maybe one that more directly affects us, right, was that the Department of Agriculture's research service, right? They had to go quiet. They weren't allowed to release their research to the public, which, as a scientist, right, that starts to become super scary. What happens to our research?
So he ordered a gag order on the USDA and also a gag order on the EPA as well, and also halted all of their grants. I just read this morning that ban was lifted as of, I think, the 30th of January.
On the EPA?
Yeah, so all current grants are not frozen, so they can continue paying out current grants.
You're talking about the USDA, right?
No, the EPA.
Oh,
I think, yeah.
Because this article came out on the 29th, and it said that no, as of that moment.
Yeah, as of it's also changing really fast. Breaking news. Yeah.
I've read that it's not uncommon though, for those types of bans, I guess, to happen in the transitions.
Well, when George W. Bush was president, there was a ban on fetal stem cell research. That's something that we all forget about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
put us behind there for a long time.
And I'm not saying that I agree with these things, but just in trying to keep an open mind, you know, not an uncommon thing. Like, if it had been a Democrat that had been elected, like if Hillary Clinton had won, maybe there would be something that the other side didn't agree with that she put a a ban on right. for 30 days. And
there's no other just, side pillar.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, let's just, I'm just trying to keep an open mind.
We'll close it up because this is Trump's America.
But I think, yeah, like the things that an administration prioritizes can have like long-lasting effects
down
the line.
These are signals, right?
So even if like there's a temporary ban and like, you know, some new grants are halted, these could be like multi-year grants that are funding research for a while. So yeah, like when a new administration comes in, they can kind of change the direction of science for years to come, which is, I think, the scariest part of this.
Well, that's right, because when you freeze these kinds of grants, this also means that there is one less scientist that the United States is training in a specific field also who will not be able to contribute to a body of work for 30 years, right? Mm-hmm. So what does that say about the portfolio of science that America is putting out? And we are a current leader, right, in scientific research. So, and Trump really loves America being number one and then being great again. So what does that mean if we start
power,
right?
It's just, yeah, only power.
Yeah, I mean, what but
intellectualism
what does that mean?
is not yeah. Valued as much, I think.
Well, part of his platform, though, right,
he's
was
so smart.
Infrastructure,
yeah.
right, was
with nobody else.
Was funding infrastructure. And so now a lot of scientific organizations and departments are wondering how grant money then will come back to them through an infrastructure
probably
rebuild.
Shuttling quotes, a lot into the quotes. Department of Energy
but
for the power.
I think going back to like the whole where we're investing our money in scientific research, kind of like the NASA thing, we're speaking to where Trump is seeing like this power and this intellect. It's kind of like this very old-fashioned way of thinking. Like, he wants to put all of this money into NASA and space exploration because, you know, back in like when the Cold War was happening, like that was where the power was at. It was this arms race with Russia to like who could get to the moon first and who could do all these things in space. And like it was this power play of like who could do all these things first and
conquer the skies.
Yeah, exactly. And climate change isn't like who can conquer climate change first? Like Russia doesn't care. And like nobody really cares so much about that except for like European countries and us. And it's not, it's just like not quite as sexy, I guess. And I feel like Trump is riding that wave.
Yeah.
Like he wants to be like, oh yeah, no, like we're gonna be on Mars next. Like that's way more important than this climate change shit.
I guess, yeah, I should bring the focus to climate change because that's what scientists should be working on right now, because the science community is definitely in
worried about it.
Agreement, sorry. Bigly. They're in Bigly Agreel.
Is it it's Big Lee or Big League? I think it's Big League.
Bigly. He said like Bigly, like it's so big. It's Bigly.
So what was the original point?
Sorry.
That you were trying
the scientific community is in agreement that climate change is definitely real. It's happening. And if our Earth increases by 2 degrees Celsius, we'll have in temperature, will have irreparable kind of effects on the climate. If we don't basically cut our emissions now, like if we cut all of our emissions now, like pretty much all of our emissions now by 2050, I think we can kind of avoid that, but it doesn't seem like that's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, and kind of back to the research that we do, right? I mean, that's a huge focus of of the work that we do as plant biologists or agricultural biologists, is the amount of arable land is projected to decrease, but the population is projected to increase, and we have to grow more food on
less land. Yeah.
Yeah. So
always,
you know, and climate change is a big factor of that. Right. So.
Well, and then I think we should also take into consideration the people that Trump has, elected to put on to his cabinet for like the EPA at the secretary for the EPA.
So yeah, I think everything is kind of he's nominated director for the EPA, right? And
yes,
I don't think
so
that they've
Scott,
been approved.
Scott Pruitt, who on his LinkedIn profile, it says that he is a leading advocate against the EPA's activist agenda. So I think that, I mean, like what a candidate, right?
Yeah.
for this position.
But this is the real issue, right? This is why we have a Trump presidency, because if you look at the voice of the other side, the people that we grew up as seeing as the underdogs, the other siders, they're the most vocal and, quite frankly, the most obnoxious people out there. Like, I still see those Greenpeace things. I'd rather be naked than wear fur. Like, I don't like it one bit. Makes me not like environmentalism.
Greenpeace people annoy me a lot, especially with their anti-GMO thing. Yeah.
Okay. But actually, so if we talk a little bit about, so California, we have our own standards for carbon emissions.
Yeah.
Right. And so what they found actually is that we've been able to reduce our carbon emissions and yet have had an economic increase, right? So this is contrary to kind of the base platform that Trump is trying to
promote. And this is the first time that's happened, where there was a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions not due to some like catastrophe or die-off.
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct. Yeah, so usually economic expansion is followed closely or linked closely with carbon emission increases or just greenhouse gas emission increases, but this was an inverse effect, right?
I'd like to cite an article I read by a not such a well-known researcher published in Science. He goes by Barack Obama.
Oh yeah, he did publish
president
in Science.
To ever publish
it.
Yeah,
for real? This is pretty recent.
Why do I not know that?
It's pretty recent. I'm on the cutting edge.
Yeah. Wow. Breaking news.
Yep, there it is. Bing, 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 bing.
Go on.
Oh, that's it. It's basically a literature review. He just spouts the same stuff that we're talking about right here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was great. I got things going down, and now things are going to go back up. It's bad.
And basically, like, every international scientific organization has like, signed letters saying that, you know, they are in agreement that climate change is happening. It's real. Mm-hmm. And we need to take action against it.
Well, so this guy, Scott Pruitt, at his... I'd like to talk about him because he upsets me. At his Senate confirmation hearing, when my man Bernie Sanders was questioning him about what his opinion was on climate change, he was like, "Oh well, I don't know his exact opinion."
You can paraphrase.
He said, "My personal opinion is immaterial to the job of the," and then Bernie was like, "Your opinion." Doesn't you think your opinion doesn't matter? You're going to be the EPA administrator, and you don't think your opinion matters? And he was just like, no, like I don't think my opinion matters. Like it doesn't matter that like whatever I think about climate change, it doesn't matter. And Bernie was just like, oh my god.
Yeah.
Because it's your lens that is going to create the priorities for that arm of the government, right?
So how do you guys feel about the succession of California? So some people are...
Wow, that escalated quickly.
Well, it kind of reminds me of this because some people think are definitely for it because they just don't want to deal with the rest of the country, I guess. But I think argument against it is that California is kind of like a stabilizing force in America, and like they kind of set standards for things like carbon emissions and... environmental regulations.
Actually, this kind of ties into something that I wanted to bring up earlier. I think it was this week, maybe it was last week. No, it's definitely this week. Was the rioting, I guess, that happened in Berkeley, right? At UC Berkeley. And this was against a speaker from Breitbart.
Is this that pussy riot I'm hearing so much about? Yes.
They probably were wearing those hats.
That would be a flash shot.
I think it's his name, that Breitbart.
Steve Bannon?
That's right.
He's like a very very conservative.
The guy that's the current editor or whatever, Milo something.
Milo, there we go.
But so in to as kind of a reaction to what was happening with this rioting that took out at UC Berkeley, President Trump said, "If you don't get your crap together, I'm not going to fund any of the research that goes on at Berkeley."
Yeah, he's like, I could. Maybe we should strip away all federal funding, which, like, those,
what
I want to
kind of response.
I guess remind
like
he tweeted it.
Hardcore. Yeah. This guy's got muscle.
Yeah, and he tweeted it.
So he tweeted it. And also, I want to remind people that these grants are not just given to universities, they're competitively earned. So Berkeley has all this money. I think they have something like.
It was around $300 million in federal grants.
Federal grant money, but most of which is competitively earned.
That's right. Well, and goes to individual students like me or you. It's not something that, like, these
it
departments...
Pays people,
that's right. to train a scientist, mm-hmm. and to research the things that that the country thinks need to be developed and researched, right? So,
well, also to be fair, I mean, the university research environment is not responsible with money.
No.
And they're also not honest with where their money goes. I'm calling you out.
There's a lot of bureaucracy.
I have to keep coming back to this. The thing is, there are examples that the other side can point to that support everything they're saying. You know, countless examples. And
but when people decide to exercise their First Amendment rights, where do you get off saying you can exercise your First Amendment rights all you want, but then I'm taking all of my money out of your...
And that's not your money either.
That's the public's money.
Yeah, it's public money.
I don't think they should have canceled his talk. They should have allowed him to speak.
No, but violence... It was starting to get violent.
But my understanding, it was protesters that are, like, not even students at the university. It was, like, another group of protesters that just, like, jumped onto it.
So if anybody knows a little bit about, like, the geography of Berkeley, right? It's a
geopolitical climate.
Right. Well, no, I mean, just, like, the neighborhoods that Berkeley is in. It's accessible by a lot of people. And so, a lot of people are going
to... It's a public campus. So there's probably
some burned out hippies hanging out there.
And I think, they were blocking him from getting into the building, so he couldn't speak. Like, I don't think anybody was going to show up to see him speak anyway. So
that's what I thought. I was like, I can't imagine anybody at Berkeley would be interested in hearing him speak unless they were just like, this is very interesting. I want to see this. Like, I don't necessarily agree with his politics. Because Berkeley is still liberal and he is so to the right.
Right.
But anyway, talk about his views on science policy.
Don't you tell Michael what to do, Marshall. Jesus. So. But do it.
Yeah, and I guess speaking of education, I think this is like also a cyclical thing. So his education pick, everybody knows, is pretty crazy. Not crazy, but she just obviously doesn't know what's happening all the time. Yeah. Any of the time.
She's clearly underqualified for the job. Is how I would put it.
And wants to promote religion in education, which will have effects down the line of diminishing
evolution.
Separation of church and state.
Yeah, teaching science and that will have bigger ramifications down the line if she's able to have a say in that policy, I think.
Especially because a lot of religious. Political heavy religious organizations like to cite freedom of religion, but then I'm sure that they're advocating for a specific religion being taught in the schools, right?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, just as a B-side about Scott Pruitt, the EPA dude.
Yes.
I just can't get enough of him.
He's a dream.
Yeah,
so you have pictures of him.
He's my desktop background. Yeah. So he's the attorney general from Oklahoma, and not only has he supported all of like the fracking that's gone on, and Oklahoma used to have like basically no earthquakes, and now they're having a whole bunch. And his response to that was, "I've acknowledged it, and I'm concerned."
We should research that.
And Bernie Sanders again was just like, "Oh, is this like the type of administrator you're going to be for the EPA? You're just going to acknowledge you're concerned about stuff?" And he was just kind of like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then another thing that's cool about him is that he has sued the EPA like 14 times. And one of his lawsuits was that he sued to fight the EPA's Clean Power Plan, and which has regulations on methane emissions. So like that, I feel like that's pretty clean cut, like that we don't want more methane emissions. And this is like the dude that might be leading the EPA.
He's a business person, right?
He's an attorney general. I don't know what
his JD for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm confusing him with other pick, because I know that like the EPA guy and Rex Tillerson or something, they have
Rex Tillerson's the ExxonMobil.
Yeah, so they have like, business ties in Russia, or I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a lot of corruption.
But the another fun fact is that, I don't know, I'm sure you guys know the dude who held up the snowball.
Yes.
So
classic.
He's also
proof of.
He was a senator, also from Oklahoma, which is Scott Pruitt's state. And I just think it's cute that they're from both from the same state. Like
regular OK corral.
Yeah, like they share the same like views on the climate change.
Yeah.
So I just thought that was like a cute fun fact.
We did our own experiments.
Yeah.
We went outside, and there was snow.
And it's cold.
Take that.
It's still very cold, and we have snowballs to prove it. So that was just a fun fact I wanted to share about.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Just so we know what's going on.
What do you have written down there, John?
Oh, I've got so many notes. I've got an article on Trump and tweeting from the Washington Post.
Oh, cool.
Let's hear it.
And a timeline of how communication between the president and the presidents and the people has evolved.
Oh, I like that.
Let's hear about
it. That was a cool perspective to take.
Breaking news.
You going to tweet it, too?
No.
I have his Twitter up right here. So.
Fantastic. So, let's start with the timeline, right? So Calvin Coolidge, he was the first president to ever make an address on radio, right? This was in 1923. And in that first broadcast, he spoke to more people than every other president before him combined. That was the first time a president recognized the power of that. And he was crazy about it. He really bragged about his broadcaster's voice, which was not a great voice if you listen to the recordings. But, so he promotes that, and then every president after him does the addresses, you know, Franklin Roosevelt's were really famous. Let me just slide this microphone a little closer. Yeah. Then in 1960, right, we got Kennedy's first. Is that too loud?
No.
No, it's good.
We're good?
You're
we're good?
Good?
Yeah. All right, I had a face from Marshall there. Okay, here we go. Kennedy, 1960, right? First televised debate against Nixon, yeah? So this is when Nixon had this huge lead and it just reversed everything. And then the president starts to market himself, right? This idea of I'd have a beer with him, like what you heard so much about with GW, yeah? Okay. Uh-huh. It sort of began with him, but it was not I'd have a beer with him. It's I'd like to be in the same room as him, you know? We used to want a president to be who we thought we could become. Now we want the president to be like we are right now. So if you're a dumb person, you want the president to be a dumb person, basically.
Yeah.
great. So Obama, he's the first president to ever use Twitter. Okay? And, oh, yes, Jess?
I was like, oh my gosh, and Trump's copying Obama. But I mean, we knew that this whole time. Like,
well, I mean,
it's obvious. Yeah,
to be fair, Twitter was not always a thing, so.
No, I know, but, he copied his cake and just, everything.
I don't think I have.
His inaugural ball,
literally.
You saw that. He had the same exact cake.
Ever seen Jess quiver in her chair like that before?
Trump wants to be Obama so bad, and, he won't admit it. But he's like, I hate Obama, but, he's president because he wants to be Obama. Because
he wants to be liked, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he wants to be Obama so bad. Anyway, keep
going.
Hey, no problem. That's good. So Obama, right, first president with a Twitter account, yeah? Interesting fact, they used to say that tweets written by him were followed by B.O., right? I would always say that at the end. That was a lie. So there was a complete
falsehood.
Falsehood, yeah. Okay. They lied to the people, the American people, and said, oh, Barack Obama's writing these tweets to you. Listen to what he has to say to you. And this just came out from his, technology advisor, that none of those were ever written by him.
So is Trump tweeting, or is
Trump? Trump is
100%.
Tweeting.
Look at these.
Are you sure?
There are, typos.
This
there
could
are...
be an intern.
Yeah.
I
fake
got stats
news.
Here.
Oh, sorry, go on.
Go for it. Okay. No worries. So like you were saying, Clinton, when she was campaigning, she wrote 5% of her tweets. Trump wrote 50%. And this was found because there were two phones posting to the Twitter account. One was an iPhone, one was an Android phone. The spelling and the tone was very different, and the iPhone is all Trump. So now they can go back through the Twitter feed and find what he wrote and what his campaign advisors wrote.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. So in reality, Trump is the first president to have this degree of private communication with us as citizens.
Yeah.
So it's the extension of Coolidge with the radio broadcast.
But it's
it's monodirectional too, right?
It's unfiltered. It's not thought out.
Right?
And didn't Ronald Reagan also have some sort of a radio address where he had a prepared speech that he was going to do, and then he instead started with a joke about how we're gonna something happened with Russia. We're going to, like, launch the missiles in 3 minutes or whatever.
That's not a funny joke.
No, but everybody knew it was a joke. And it was, like, the first time the president had, like, gone off script. And
yeah.
It was, like, during this time that, I don't know.
But everybody I hadn't heard of it. But.
I think I see the value in that and, like, the direct line of communication with, like, you know, the leader of your country. That's kind of unprecedented before. But I also don't want the world to, like, you know, hear what the president has to say without him thinking about it.
Yeah.
Well, I think this also brings up kind of like an aside about pure democracy versus a republic also, uh-huh. because this creates like an ultra democracy, right? And if we know anything about that, if we look at the way that the California government is structured, it's a pure democracy, not a republic like the United States is structured. You see a lot of legislation that ends up going back on itself even just a few cycles after, and then they write it back into legislation and then write it back out again. And so there's a lot of waste, I guess, on topics, and a lot of very quick perspectives that end up affecting millions of people and then having to be redacted. So it's a little dangerous.
Yeah, you can have that sort of quick action at the state level. I mean, more than you can at the federal level. Mm-hmm. So if Trump's making these statements of policy mm-hmm. and they're going to be enacted, then
right.
there's really not yeah. that same flexibility.
I mean, like the tweet that he sent out with Berkeley, like he was just like, maybe we should take away all your federal funding kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah, like, but then that create that, what does that do yeah. with, right, like senators and representatives, they start drafting policy, they start wasting a lot of American dollars doing something to try to support the president, which maybe he wasn't wholehearted about. He was just trying to, like, fire a shot.
Yeah, he was basically just, like, shaking his finger at them.
That's right. You know. So, I don't know.
But this is another issue, because Trump ran his campaign on a on sort of a platform of authenticity, right? Like, that was what people said. Oh, Hillary, we can't trust her. Like, what's she doing behind the scenes? Here's this speech where she says this. Trump's like, he says what he feels, even though what he feels is that we all need to be stomped under his boots.
That's right. Or that he feels, hold please, we don't have a full thought yet.
Or that he feels a woman's vagina.
Yeah.
That was. I thought
is that what
funny.
He called it?
I believe he called it a pussy.
Grabbed her pussy, yes.
Yes.
Because he's famous pussy. And you yeah. could just.
You could do that.
You can do that when you're famous.
Yeah.
Well, and then you can just flood your Twitter feed with a whole bunch of other nonsense bullshit, and then. When did that happen again? Was
yeah.
that like 20 years ago?
Yeah. Well, and then, I mean, I guess, I don't know. Let's just keep talking about the pussy. Well,
so with these science gag orders, did you guys receive the email from ECR, like, kind of regarding that? So
Janet,
maybe the public is interested in this, but, like, they've, yeah, told us to basically continue working as normal. Yeah. So we're kind of not, I guess.
Well,
because they have instituted gag orders on the EPA and USDA, right. But science, I think, is very collaboratory in nature, so you can't really it's hard to remove those ties, cuz I'm sure that, like, we probably have projects like,
well, also, I mean, part of the way that you get funded is through your publications. So
yeah.
then how do I disseminate my research? One is through publications, but also we go to conferences, we go to seminars and symposiums, right? We go to a lot of open forums. And what does that mean for all of these open forums as well?
And science is pretty worthless if you can't tell anybody about it.
Well, and I think what you mean also by collaborative is that, like,
so you
might have a grant that's
right.
funded. You might be funded by your research might be like 30% funded by the EPA,
mm-hmm.
or in like 70% by the NSF. And what are you gonna do? Like,
yeah,
oh, well, 30% of this project. Like, I guess I'm just gonna be working 70% of the time now. And like, it's all so interwebbed. Like, it just doesn't work like that. And also, if you're like, I get excited about the work that I'm doing. I'm not gonna be like, well, I'm just gonna stop for these next 2 months because this is just a burn out the clock type of thing for me. Like, it doesn't, I don't know.
Well, you get energized by seeing what other researchers are doing, and And, you know, we all stand on the shoulders of giants, right? We didn't come up with all of these theories and theorems and equations and research tools on our own. So, I mean, what does that mean, too, if you can't share these? I mean, there are a lot of free web tools that we use to conduct our research. What does that mean for the labs that put those out, too?
Yeah. And also there was an effort, I know, among the UC campuses to also collect and archive all of, basically all the scientific information on all the various government websites before
it gets pulled?
Yeah, before it gets pulled. So there are people working on that to save that information. Because I know that they're already starting to remove some things from certain websites, and whether it's temporary or permanent, we don't know yet.
That's right. But thank God people are archiving that information. Yeah.
I guess also too this, so the Muslim ban also affects our the sort of collaboratory nature of science too, because a lot of our researchers are from overseas, from different countries.
I just want to state that on President Trump's Twitter, he says everybody is arguing whether or not it is a ban.
Big capitals.
Yeah, call it what you want. It is about keeping bad people with bad intentions, in parentheses, out of the country. So I just I want to clarify that.
Yeah.
It's not. It seems like it's not a Muslim ban. So. And then breaking
news. It's just bad people ban.
Yeah, but breaking news last night. The Trump administration's appeal to have the ban reinstated was denied.
So this moves very fast. As of the time of this recording, February 5th, Super Bowl Sunday, this is Nature Boy. Featuring radio, callback. So as of right now, that ban was appealed, or his appeal was rejected.
Right. No. It's in appeal, but it is not going to be instated while it is being appealed.
So and then so I heard... Banana's been appealed?
I got a notification at 3 in the morning that it...
So he's just going to escalate the appeal. Where it goes to next is the Ninth Circuit Court, and that's Democratic. So they're gonna block it. After the Ninth Circuit Court, he could escalate it again to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, because it's split 4-4 right now, just usually always sides with the Ninth Circuit decision. So it'll probably be it won't be able to pass.
I hope that Neil Gorsuch or whoever does not get on, does not make it. I hope they show him just as much, whatever.
They're filibustering?
Just as nice to him as they were to Obama's pick.
So, I mean, I personally know, I have friends who are here, on green cards and visas and stuff like that, and they were temporarily out of the country, and a lot of them are, scared of whether they can come back and keep working.
I don't think I know one lab on campus that doesn't have somebody from a foreign country.
That's worried.
Problem. It's the first issue, but how many Muslims do you know, huh? They don't do science, and they hate women.
Oh, my God.
Just saying.
I definitely want our listeners to reflect on an idea that if our researchers are only homegrown, that is kind of saying that we only know best and that we shouldn't try to learn from others' experiences because those experiences are inferior.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's obviously not true, but think about that with the policies that are coming into place, right?
Yeah.
It's super important to have an outside perspective. Check yourself.
So that's why science has been able, I think, to advance so much in the past years because of things like United Nations and countries working together on scientific issues that are affecting everybody. So
I'm actually trying to think of that sort of collaboration that I've heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of some? Do any come to mind? Is that how we're actually progressing forward, or is that one of these, hey, we all got to stick together things that seems unrealistic to the other side?
You mean what other industries what are specific do examples? Collaborate this much?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that it's a combination of this kind of outside collaboration, but also peer review.
Well, I think, right, so the example I'm thinking of is the Paris Agreement, right? And that was sort of like Obama's big environmental legacy. He mm-hmm. signed the Paris Agreement. There's going to be this fund that people pay into. Yeah, it's an international idea of fighting climate change and greenhouse gas emissions and all of this. But until we have the New World Order, which Trump will usher in, the one world government, okay, the Illuminati, pyramids, until we have that, there's no way to enforce these things. The UN has this amount that you're supposed to pay into the fund, mm-hmm. but there's right. no enforcement there.
That's right.
These sorts of international collaborations are really stymied by the level of disconnect we've had in the past, and it's going to become worse, but how good has it been?
Mm-hmm. I'm just going in circles. Like before the Paris Agreement, there was the Kyoto Protocol, which helped divest some of Japan's reliance on unsustainable sources of energy, and also kind of the U.S.
Now they just have babies running on treadmills over there.
Right, yes.
Every other country is bad.
Well, U.S., we're number one.
Yeah.
Well, almost. Now Trump's working on it.
He'll keep us there, don't worry.
Yeah.
He'll make us better than number one. That's the goal.
Yeah.
Go on, Trump.
No, I mean, I just think that, I think I see what John is saying, and that there's too much reliance on assuming that people will do what's in the best interest of the world.
Yeah, yeah. That everybody has a good heart.
Because there's no kind of course of repercussions. And I guess you can call it the free market, because everybody could just cut us off, and then we're going to...
That's right.
I'll die.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's already working on Australia, which was,
I think, too, globalization has also really freaked people out in this modern era, because we kind of grew up with an idea of a fixed amount of resources, right? And so everybody is scrounging and scraping to get as many of these fixed resources as possible. And so I think that this also definitely hampers international collaboration, I guess, at a governmental level. And you can see that with a lot of countries that are annexing smaller territories, right? Or traveling into international spaces and building entire islands so that way they can claim these areas because of the resources that are available to them there. So, random aside.
Does anybody have any last thoughts?
The Secretary of Agriculture nominee, Sonny Perdue, just wanted
of
to...
Purdue University.
I love that name.
Yeah,
he already sounds like a hippie.
Yeah, so I just wanted to say a fun fact about him is that when his state, that I don't remember where he's from, was
probably
going...
Probably Indiana?
Oklahoma?
Was going through a drought, I'll let you know. His solution, like what he thought would be cool to do, would be to organize a prayer circle to pray for rain. So I just think that I'm glad that that's going to be our new approach for managing agriculture in the United States.
But here's our problem, right? We look at, I mean, that's really dumb. Like, that's stupid. And there's no God, only Satan can give us the strength we need to get through life.
Nobody would laugh at Native Americans for doing that.
But they're also not the Secretary of Agriculture.
Well, I'm just saying,
you do whatever you want in your free time, but you're not the Secretary.
But because we criticized him on this base level of, oh, religion is dumb and praying is stupid, we are discounting, let's say, 30%, half of the population that prays every night and really believes in the power of this.
That's
so
fair.
We're eliminating any chance for us to actually communicate with them. It's just two sides lobbing
insults.
Fine
if you
want to
pray for rain. I'm just saying that it's
don't
not
use government funds to do it.
Yeah, and it's like, even if you were a scientist that prayed for rain, like, that's fine. I may think less of you personally for it, but I just don't think it should be policy, okay? Yeah.
And John, don't take her personal beliefs into account for this very professional, okay?
I guess science is important. We should be supporting science. Science is, I think, wants the best for the world.
Breaking news.
That is breaking news.
This is not fake news, okay?
I actually wanted to say that the real scary thing here is that Obamacare is the prime target. And there are a lot of people who are reliant on that already because it's been in place.
Oh, yeah.
And they're gonna tear it apart. And they're even talking about tearing it down without having an interim system in place for afterwards.
And I'll add
repeal
to that.
Repeal and replace, though. They're gonna replace it.
That's what they said.
They're going to.
They're gonna figure it out. But something that's sort of interesting is that there are Republican governors, like the governor of Kentucky, who have gone and looked at his constituents, and they've realized that if they get rid of Obamacare, they are going to be screwed. That their budget, they mm-hmm. won't be able to mm-hmm. manage how many people will be losing their health care. And then they're like, now they want to keep Obamacare. They're like, oops, we screwed up. We want it. Yeah. And so now they have these Republican politicians who are kind of like, sorry, never mind, in these poor states.
Yeah, I honestly have friends who are considering, like, going to school or, like, taking a bit of a risk for a better future in the long run, who now won't do it or are afraid to do it because they don't have an option to have health care for themselves, their kids, their family members, while they take on this risk.
Also, I have one more thing to say. The wall. I don't know if you know how we're paying for it.
Mexico.
Well, yeah, but it's...
Me.
So the way that we're paying for it, or Mexico is paying for it, is our taxes are going to be raised.
So we're paying for it.
We're paying for it. And then, like, but don't worry, Mexico's going to pay for it eventually. It's going to be through a form, maybe a complicated
form.
Well,
they said that they're going to introduce, like, a 20%
tax increase to us, and then eventually...
it's a tariff.
And then we'll get a check back. I'm sure.
I just want to let everybody know that it's never going to happen. So our taxes could have been raised for other stuff, but we're going to be building a really cool wall. So,
bottom line is we're scared. thank you for listening to Nature Boy. This has been a special breaking news edition.
Burn some clean coal.
Also, breaking news, Lady Gaga decided to stop by here on her way to the Super Bowl. And
oh,
so
my gosh.
She's going to play us out.
Hey, guys, I'm here.